and our other members will be here shortly. So we wanted to get started. And to start off, we've got a couple of House members that have waited patiently, and so I think we'd like to invite Representative Flores and Representative Thatcher to come up. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 424.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and those few members of the committee here. We thank you for the opportunity to come and talk to you today. For the record, my name is Linda Flores. I'm State Representative for House District 51 in Clackamas County. We're talking today in thorough concept about real ID, and I understand that there are amendments that are going to be offered, so I'm going to just give my concepts very generally about the concept of real ID. And this is obviously a bill that was passed in Congress in 2005 at the recommendation of the 9/11 Commission. And indeed, it was appended to an appropriations bill to fund the military. But the concept of talking about the driver's licenses and proof of legal residency is already, the driver's license is already the key document for air travel, for banking, for retail and healthcare transactions, access to government buildings, and several other important activities. The thorough purpose is to enhance the security in the issuance of driver's licenses, which will be in regard to personal identification cards and will bring the entire country up to a minimum level of identification security, lessening the need for us to develop a separate national ID card. Overall, we are talking about national security. Here in Oregon, we're talking about not only security, but proof of legal presence. Real ID Act is not perfect. No one said it was. But it was fully debated by Congress, and any changes can and should be made at the federal level. Department of Motor Vehicles told us last session that it would be too expensive to implement, and they didn't have the technology to verify one of the elements, and that is Social Security numbers. We do understand, however, and I understand Department of Motor Vehicles is going to be here today to give us some testimony, that there were funds acquired, and I'm not sure if those were federal funds, and they found a way to hook up to the Social Security online verification system and can now verify Social Security numbers if they want to. We should settle for no less. We should try to work with our federal partners to resolve the issues of timing, of cost, of identifiers, and those types of things that would be required under a Real Identification Act, not only at the federal level, but certainly as states move to implement. With that, I will defer to Representative Thatcher, because we both must move on to another committee. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Just for the record, my name is Kim Thatcher. I'm representative for Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh. And ironically, this morning, on my way into the Capitol, I was T-boned, and so I'm feeling a little loopy. But the thing is, we have standards for drivers. We set up rules. Driving is not a civil right. It's a privilege. And if you break the rules too many times, you can have that privilege taken away. The state has a responsibility to protect the integrity and the security of the system. It is a breeder document. Once you get it, it can be used to open the doors for all kinds of other documents. Right now, Oregon is moving in that direction of securing the system, and the legislature voted in support of Senate Bill 640 last session. As I recall, it's 28-2 in the Senate and 42-17 in the House, so pretty overwhelmingly supporting Senate Bill 640, which implements the biometric data system, which helps prevent identity theft. And Real ID is a logical follow-up, I believe. When it comes to you getting on an airplane, going into a federal building to pay your taxes, we want Oregon driver's licenses to be accepted. Certainly, there are some changes that might need to be made, and Congress may delay the whole thing or modify the rules. Perhaps we can put maybe a placeholder in the bills to allow the DMV to start the process of implementing Real ID, but give them the flexibility to modify or match the rules as they're being developed. At the federal level, there is a senator who has introduced a Senate bill. It's 563, which provides a longer time frame for states to comply with the Federal ID Act, and I believe it's 6 months at this time that they're talking about. So that would give us some necessary time. But right now we have the DMV has the ability to hook up to the SOLVE program, this SSOLV, which is a Social Security Online Verification Program. Let's give them the legislative authority to do that, at least start that part of the process.
Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and I'm sure that you'll be seeing perhaps and hopefully a House bill that might be dealing with this issue as well that Representative Thatcher and I have introduced.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. What I'd like to do, and just to kind of, and I apologize for our lateness today. I know we have a lot of people signed up, and a lot of people here are interested in this issue, which we understand. And of course, we have limited committee time. I'm going to do my best after we have a presentation of what Real ID actually is, to have people comment who are in support of some aspect or opposed to some aspect. So we try to get the issues on the table, try not to be repetitive. And of course, we'll have to limit those comments so that we can get as many people in our limited time as possible. This obviously will not be the only time we hear the bill, but we want to get the issues on the table. With that, I'd like to ask Lauren Young from DMV to come forward. And what I'm going to ask the committee to do is I'm going to ask Ms. Young to do a presentation of what the Federal Real ID Act is and what it entails as of today. I'm going to ask that we not ask questions until she's done her presentation so we have the whole picture. And then we'll ask questions and then go into testimony, and then the audience will have, this may generate some additional questions within the audience once we've heard the presentation. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lorna Youngs with the Department of Transportation, Administrator of the DMV. And I'm provided you testimony on House Bill 424, which essentially gives the department authority to implement many of the provisions of the Real ID Act. That act was passed, as we've heard, in May 11 of 2005, and it gave states 3 years to come into compliance. There is no penalty, no monetary penalty to the state for failure to comply with the act. However, driver licenses and identification cards issued by states that are not in compliance will not be accepted for federal purposes. Federal purposes have yet to be defined in rule, but it is assumed that a minimum of those would be such things as security checks at airports and allowing entrance into certain federal facilities. We are waiting for Department of Homeland Security rules to spell out the details of what compliance means. There are many changes to the way in which a driver license will be issued as a result of the Real ID Act. And I provided at the end of the testimony Attachment A, which goes through the specifics of those requirements. If you'd like, I can briefly refer to those. And what I wanted to point out is those particular specifics that have a slight gray background to them are requirements of the Federal Real ID Act that do not need a change in statute in order for us to implement. So it requires standardization of card specifications, minimum security features in the cards, machine-readable technology, so that we have a uniform. Many states use barcodes. They use mag stripes, so we have uniform machine-readable technology on the card. Requires electronic verification of all identity documents that are required in order for you to get a real a complying document, such as birth certificates, social security cards, immigration documents, military documents, passports, etc. It requires legal presence or lawful status in the United States as a prerequisite of issuance. It requires that we image all documents that are provided as primary evidence of your legal presence, as well as your name and who you are. It requires that you take digital photos, which we already do. electronic access between states so that we'll be able to access each other's database and make sure that we are not issuing duplicate licenses in different states. It requires that we make sure that we've terminated the license in another state before you issue it in your state. Physical security features for the facilities where the driver licenses are issued. Background checks of the persons who are involved in manufacturing or production of driver licenses. Fraudulent employee training and fraudulent documents. Expiration dates, which are no more than 8 years, which Oregon currently has. And it also gives a provision for a driving-only privilege card. I also forgot to mention that for those cards that for individuals do have lawful presence in the United States but not permanent presence, the card must be tied to the length of stay. Therefore, if you're here for a year or two or three, that's the length of your driver license. People on indefinite status have a one-year driver license, which must be renewed annually. And you can get a renewal if your status is renewed. What Senate Bill 424 does is provide the necessary statutory changes in order to implement these provisions. Currently, we are awaiting the rules from the Department of Homeland Security. Those rules have been sent to the Office of Management and Budget on the 2nd of January. They have up to 90 days to review the rules. Then those are returned to the agency, and then they can release them for public comment. We are hopeful that we would see them before the end of this session, but it's not certain that we will, although the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security has made public statements recently that he expects to see the rules out in March. Because many of these detailed requirements of the Act are not provided and won't be provided until we have the rules, we are asking for the greatest flexibility possible in implementing the Real ID Act, and so that we can not go back and have to have a statutory change. Currently, what this bill does is it provides that we do require proof of legal status in the United States before issuance, renewal, or replacement of a driver license, a driver permit, or identification card. It requires that we issue as a temporary card to those individuals who have a temporary status in the United States, which expires upon the date of the expiration of their status. And if you have individuals with indefinite stays, have a one-year driver license, which needs to be renewed annual. It requires that we verify Social Security number. It requires that we verify other identifying numbers. And in this case, what we're primarily looking at is your alien registration number for those individuals who are here with legal status. There are two systems in place for verification. One is the SOLVE system, which Representative Thatcher discussed. The other is the SAVE system, which is the one in which you use to verify alien registration number. And that is one that is a system that is available for states to connect to. This bill also requires that individuals prove identity, date of birth, address before the department issues driver license, driver permit, or identification card, and that it gives us rulemaking authority on exactly what kind of documents are required, and that way we can make sure that we are in conformity with what those documents that might be required under the federal rules. It also puts into place the requirement for the security clearance for employees that are manufacturing or producing the driver license. It prohibits duplicate images and photographs and customer signatures from being made available to anyone other than law enforcement officials, motor vehicle agencies from other jurisdictions, and the department acting in its official capacity. And this is an important consideration because the Federal Real ID Act does not really address the protection of documents, and this bill does. It limits the who can have access to this information. It also authorizes us to image documents that are presented for proof of legal presence as well as identity, and to retain those images for 10 years. And also, once again, we have added a prohibition from disclosure of that information to anyone except law enforcement and the department acting in official capacity, which is something in addition to what the Real ID Act requires. This bill also carries a fee to cover the costs, requires verification of the source documents with the issuing agency, which is, as I speak to, a little bit of an issue because some of the source documents at this point don't have electronic verification systems in place. Some of the issues that need to be considered in the implementation of 424 is that there will be considerable cost associated with this bill. Most of these requirements cannot be implemented by May 11 of 2008 because of the technology either does not exist to connect up to certain systems for verification of documents, or we simply do not have the adequate amount of time to make all the necessary changes to our own information technology system in order to implement the Act by 2008. We anticipate ourselves that taking a good hard look at all the changes that we have to make to our own system in order to implement the provisions of Senate Bill 424, it would take us at least to mid-2010 to make all the necessary information technology changes in our own computer system. Another issue to consider as well is the fact that every Oregonian who applies for a renewal or replacement as well as a new driver license will have to undergo the same process. So now where a renewal or replacement is a simple process of you showing up with your renewal notice, we look at your photo on file and we reissue, you will now need to be required to provide all of the proof of legal presence and that you are lawfully in the United States, so that we will require passports, birth certificates, etc., and will make the renewal and the replacement process a more lengthy process for Oregonians. We estimate approximately 4% of the population is not legally here in the U.S., and so we would anticipate a similar number here for Oregonians. So that number of individuals will not be allowed to have a driver license, ID card, and certainly will have to deal with, as other states do, with the issue of individuals who do not have driver licenses but will be still driving. We estimate the impact of 424 to the department for the 2007-09 biennium at $5.4 million. And $6 million for the 2009 and 2010 biennium. That's just the impact of Senate Bill 424. We do not know the full impact of the Real ID Act because that will only be determined once we see the rules and see the additional requirements that are in the rules. The funding would need to go for additional employees because the issuance process will take more time, and if we want to maintain the same level of wait time that we have now, we will need to add staff. And then, of course, we need the additional resources for programming in order to comply with all of these changes to the system. We also estimate, as a result of the fact that we will not be issuing licenses or ID cards to a certain portion of the population, approximately $1.4 million revenue loss for 2007-2009 biennium and a $2.4 million revenue loss for the following biennium. So in summary, the Senate Bill 424 provides authority needed for statutory changes needed for us to become in compliance with what the provisions of the statute of the Real ID Act is. And as I've said before, if Oregon does not require, then the impact is primarily on the citizenry and the acceptance of their documents by federal authorities. We do have one concern with the Act, and that is the requirement that we verify all existing documents because the technology does not exist for many documents, and we would request more permissive language if this bill were to move forward. And also, we have concerns about the compliance date of May 11, knowing that it will take us so much longer to implement all of the changes that are required.
Thank you, Ms. Youngs. A couple of questions regarding this. On one of the issues of the Real ID, the machine-readable technology, such as barcodes and magnetic strips, with minimum data elements, would you elaborate on that a little bit more of what a citizen might anticipate having in this card, that how that would be done and what type of information we would be carrying around?
Mr. Chair, that is the great unknown. That is one of the many things that we are waiting federal rulemaking to spell out. Currently, what we have now are 1D barcode and 2D barcodes on our card. And in the 2D barcode, the one that looks like a kind of a cloud, it essentially has the data elements that are on the front of the card, your name, your date of birth, your address, when your driver license expires, et cetera. It does not have your photo. Most other states have analogous sorts of things on their cards. But that's one of the many aspects of the Real ID Act that are unknown until the federal rules are released. So I cannot answer your question.
Okay. Because I think one of the real concerns with that I think states are having and individuals are having, and I'm sure we'll hear some of that today, is independent of some of the determinations of legal status, which a lot of people think of Real ID. It goes, I think what this points out, it goes much, much more. I mean, we're kind of supplanting states' rights now to a federal and a concern that, you know, people's very private information may be carried around in their wallet, and who knows what the federal government may put on that particular card. And I think that's one of the real issues that, again, we haven't had rulemaking on that, but I know there's some concerns that will be expressed today about just what the federal government may, you know, have on us and on our cards, and that go beyond maybe the scope of what the state of Oregon needs to do to protect the integrity of its own license. I'd like to have you comment before we, and I'll ask the committee questions, on the Dash 2 Amendment, which would state that the state would not move forward on Real ID except for the portion of legal citizenship or presence, subject to either funding requirements from the federal government and or protecting the privacy of our citizens. And in terms of where you believe the department needs to go at this time, any concerns that you would have on that particular approach?
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair. The Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 424 have two objectives as we understand it. First, that prohibits Oregon from complying with the Real ID Act unless certain requirements are met, such as in federal funding. Second, the bill requires proof of U.S. citizenship or lawful presence in the United States and a Social Security number or proof of ineligibility for a Social Security number before the department will issue a driver license permit or ID card. Currently, Oregon is one of 9 states that does not verify that a person is lawfully present in the United States before issuing a driver license or permit. And with my testimony, I've provided you a map of the United States that has been developed by the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators. At Canada, as you see in red, is requires lawful presence in order to issue. All the states in green are states that require lawful presence before issuance. The state of Utah is in yellow because it's the only state of the nation that requires not only lawful presence but does provide the driver-only privilege card for those individuals who do not have the ability to prove lawful presence. And then those states that are in blue are those states that do not require lawful presence in the U.S. before issuance. What this particular bill does is that it puts some requirements on the department before we can issue Real ID compliant cards. These requirements include security measures to protect individual privacy and safeguard against unauthorized disclosure or use of data. It requires adequate federal funding for implementation of the Real ID Act, and also requires that the department not charge unreasonable fees or place unreasonable record-keeping burdens on the applicants before issuing or renewing or replacing a driver license or ID card. It does, however, require proof of legal presence, requires SSN verification, or proof that a person is not eligible for an SSN, and requires that a person issue a temporary driver license permit or ID card to those individuals who have a temporary status in the United States. We do have a few issues with the bill are similar, that we need to point out, as the same issues with Real ID. Of course, first of all, is that there are individuals that will not qualify, obviously. About 4% of the population is expected not to be legally in the U.S. and therefore will not qualify. That we will have individuals who do come in for renewal and replacement of driver licenses or ID cards will have to prove their lawful presence and will need to get the necessary documentation to do so. We are just launched verification of SSNs for commercial driver license holders, but we'll need to make some modifications to the system because of some new security requirements from the Social Security Administration to expand that system in order to be able to verify all driver licenses with that system. The bill itself, because it does not have an implementation date, the implication is that January 1st, 2008 would be the implementation date. We have concerns with that. We believe that we can do the lawful presence portion of it in terms of verifying SSN, and as well as doing the review of the documents to prove legal status by January 2008. But we have concerns about our ability to program the computer system to provide the temporary driver license and would ask for a later date on that portion of the bill. Also, the bill does not allow for a ability to recover a fee for the costs associated with the bill, and we would like to have some consideration of that. We estimate that it would be approximately $2.8 million in the 07-09 biennium to implement the bill and about $1 million in 2009-2010 biennium. The funding is for the computer programming needed to make the changes to the system, as well as the additional staff that would be required to be able to maintain our existing wait times, given the fact that the driver license issuance process would be lengthened with this new requirement. We also, once again, because of the individuals who would not be able to get a license, estimate $1.8 million revenue loss for the 07-09 biennium and a $2.4 million revenue loss for the subsequent biennium. So in summary, if this bill were to pass as written, we would not implement the Real ID Act until certain requirements are met. We would, however, move forward with legal presence, and we would ask for some consideration of our concerns.
Thank you, Ms. Youngs, and thank you for giving us a very good overview. Question of Ms. Youngs. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am always incredibly nervous whenever we have rule writing without really tight oversight by either Congress or this legislative body. Why are we deciding to go forward with this when we don't even have federal rules out? And then what happens if we wait until after they get their federal rules out so we know how to tighten up our state statutes? What would be the problem with waiting?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, there is no reason the state cannot choose to wait. But as I've pointed out, if you all were to authorize today what the bill has in it, in other words, the authority to begin to work on implementing the many things that are required, it would take Oregon until mid-2010 to comply with the requirements of Senate Bill 424. So the longer you wait, the longer it will be before we can be in compliance. What we're looking at in terms of rulemaking are on the details of exactly what documents are required, et cetera. But certainly this is a policy decision for the legislature. What we are doing is trying to provide you with our best estimate of what it costs, how long it will take, and where we sit compared to other states. Those states without legal presence already, it will take much longer to become compliant than other states who already have legal presence in many of the other aspects that exist in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lorna, I guess the next question I have is when I look at the sheer size of what Real ID is at the national level, the cost seems to be huge, and without federal funding, is there any estimate from DMV or ODOT about the total cost of this as the federal government chose not to provide any funding for this unfunded mandate?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, at this point, until we see the federal rules and see any additional specifics required at the federal rules, all we're able to do is provide a fiscal impact of what we have done for what the bill requires. And so once we see the federal rules, and that's what the Dash 2 amendments are asking us to do, is to provide prepare a comprehensive overview of what the total impact of the bill would be. So I'm afraid we can't do that until we see the federal rules.
One final, if I could. I guess my biggest concern in this whole discussion is the security of the information of the citizens of the state of Oregon, to make sure that we're the policymakers for the citizens of the state, and I'm very concerned about the privacy issues and the security issues. How do we make sure that within on our connection to the federal into a federal system that we can maintain the security for our citizens here in the state of Oregon?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, we have placed in the Senate the House version of the bill for which the Senate version is a relatively the same bill. Some additional security requirements on who gets the right now the information that we are collecting already on individuals is the Driver Privacy Act determines what information can be shared with whom. The additional kinds of information that we would collect on individuals, or Social Security number, which we're collecting now, we already have in statute that can only be disclosed to, maybe it's retained within the department, it's not disclosed. Of concern, obviously, would be all of the documents that we are imaging that would be a requirement of the Federal Real ID Act, and this bill, 424, would say are retained only within the department for the department's use or shared with law enforcement if necessary, because the purpose of the imaging of the documents is to enable a fraud investigation. But you have an excellent point. It's not clear to us yet, and it won't be clear until the federal rules are out, the degree to which information sharing is protected or expected under the federal rules.
Senator Starr.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Lorna, for being here. In your testimony, there's a number of places where you state no system exists today as it relates to a number of the requirements in the Federal Real ID. Can you talk a little bit about those particular systems that have yet to be created? And they're interstate. I mean, they're systems where it would require a state to be able to communicate. Talk, if you can, a little bit about what it is going to require the states to do in order to become Real ID compliant among the states, not just Oregon, but system-wide.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, as I stated, currently there exist two systems, Social Security system, the Department of Homeland Security system, that would allow to check Social Security number and your immigration documents. There is not yet a national database for birth certificates. There is the beginning of one, but it's not yet national, and therefore one could not check birth certificates. There obviously exists a system for passports because border guards have those, but that's not yet set up so that states could hook into it. I'm not quite sure the state of military documents, what kind of systems are in place for military documents to be checked among military bases, but it's not set up for states to hook up to it. Then we have other kinds of documents that people may use. So at this point, I don't know exactly how the Department of Homeland Security proposes to address that aspect of the bill. They'll need to address that in rulemaking because they do recognize that those systems are not yet in place. And also what is not in place is a national database where states exchange information with each other about all drivers. There does exist through the American Association of Motor Vehicles what we call the problem driver pointer system, in which we send information to that database about any driver who has been suspended. But all drivers who have a good record are not in that database. So that database, if it were to be the basis, shall we say, of a national database about all drivers, would need to be tremendously expanded. So currently, that is an endeavor that the American Association of Motor Vehicles has been interested in for many, many years, but it's a very expensive proposition.
Mr. Chair, thank you. If the state of Oregon, based on rules that we don't have yet, were to pass a law to implement the Real ID again on a federal program, which we don't know the rules are, what would you expect that the additional fee would be on Oregonians as they go to get a new driver's license or to renew their driver's license, an additional cost?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I have no idea. And I would assume that that would be subject to considerable negotiation at the legislative level as to whether or not they would choose to pass the entire cost off to the citizenry or would expect to take a portion of that cost out of highway funds.
And one final question. Now, the other piece of this, I just want to make sure I clear my mind, and I think I do, but you could confirm it, is that, and again, we don't have the rules, so we don't know for sure. That's the frustrating part here, and we may not have the rules until we're done this legislative session, and that's an issue in and of itself. But from what we understand today, somebody that comes either get a new driver's license or to renew would have to bring source documents that basically prove who they are, who they say they are, whether that's a birth certificate, a military ID card maybe would work, or a passport might work. They're going to have to bring those documents regardless of whether it's the first time or it's, you know, they've been driving for 40 years. And the Department of Motor Vehicles is going to have to scan those documents. Well, first they're going to have to verify that the documents are valid, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one process. And then the second process, they're going to have to scan those so that you have those on file in electronic format.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to then have to save those documents for a period of up to 10 years. And you're nodding, so that I'm on the right track.
Correct.
So then those scanned documents are going to go into a database at some level. Whether or not that database, which we don't know, it hasn't been created yet, I guess, but the database then will be accessible so that if a driver that got a driver's license or renewal in Oregon moved to Idaho or anywhere else, when they go to get a driver's license there, the folks can have access to that database of the scanned documents that were scanned here in Oregon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, currently under the provisions of 424, we're not, the bill does not allow for that. However, it's unknown whether or not, and it was unclear certainly in the language of the Real ID Act, whether the sharing of data was meant to include those documents. One could presume that once you established lawful presence and were able to maintain that on your home database, that that information would be what would be transferred over, not the primary documentation. Because as we read through the committee notes about why that particular provision of scanning documents was put in there in the first place, it was our understanding that that was meant to be used by the home state as a way in which they could work with law enforcement to deal with fraudulent documents. How that might be chosen to be used or interpreted with rulemaking is yet to be understood.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm sure we'll have more questions as we move on.
You're welcome.
And just to mention again, clearly we're not going to get everybody who would like to talk, but I do want to get all the issues on the table. So we're going to start with that, and we're going to go pro, con, and I realize pro may be pro something and con some other part, but I'm going to do my best to try and balance those comments so that we have a good flavor for what we have here. So I'll start with Kelly DeVore, Andrea Meyer, and Rick Bennett. If the three of you would come up. They're listed on the con side, and then we're going to go to the first three folks on the pro side, and I'm going to ask you to keep your remarks as short as possible. We'll ask questions, get to the next group, and then if you hear comments on either side of this issue or you're testifying and those comments have been made before, I would ask you to give us new information as opposed to reiterating things that the committee has heard to allow as many people as possible to talk.
Chair Metzger, Andrea Meyer, I'm going to let them start, and this is actually Rick Bennett's back there. We had the panel of four, but they're together, so this is Steve.
I realize that's not Rick Bennett. So
I'll let them begin because I appreciate they need to leave.
Thank you.
So Chair Metzger is member of the committee. My name is Kelly DeVore, and I'm the Vice President of Public Affairs for Planned Parenthood. We're a nonprofit reproductive health care organization, and we operate 9 health centers in Ashland, Medford, Grants Pass, Cottage Grove, Eugene, Springfield, Florence, and Junction City. Our primary focus is on health care. In our health care centers is the provision of family planning services, but we're not here to clearly talk to you about our services today. We're actually here to speak to one component of implementation of the Real ID Act based on an experience that we've had in our health centers. And that's the process of obtaining birth certificates for various populations. As an organization, we do not have a position on Senate Bill 424. We're merely here to share our story with you, as I said before. During this last summer, when Oregon was working on the implementation of the Federal Deficit Reduction Act, as it relates to documentation of citizenship, we as an agency decided...
Excuse me, this gentleman can't hear, so speak closer to the mic. Thank you.
So we as an agency this summer decided we would offer assistance to our clinic clients to obtain their birth certificates. And we did this because we suspected that our most vulnerable clients, low-income individuals specifically, would be most impacted by that administrative challenge of getting their birth certificates. We wanted to ensure that they would not experience a delay in receiving family planning services if they were part of federal programs such as Medicaid. And we soon learned that the process was actually challenging for pretty much anyone. So my colleague Steve is going to actually walk you through the process that we undertook this summer to help folks try to access their birth certificate information.
Thank you.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, my name is Steve Helwig. I'm the fiscal systems analyst for Planned Parenthood of Southwestern Oregon. In order to comply with the Federal Reduction Act, we anticipated that the birth certificate would be the primary document for providing proof of citizenship that most clients would be using. To this end, we decided to assist clients in obtaining their birth certificate by, and the way we did this was to get the applications from all 50 states for birth certificates and assist them in the process for applying for said birth certificate. We asked them to pay the application fee that the states charge, and then we helped them in the filling out of the application and then mailing it in. Our hope was to get a high rate of return on these birth certificates so that we could be in compliance with the Federal Reduction Act in improving citizenship to the clients that we're serving under Medicaid, and of course being able to supply the clients with their needed birth certificates. In the process, in doing this, we naturally kept spreadsheets to track our progress in how this process was working, and we found that in very short time that the rate of success was not great. To this date, less than half of the applications that we sent in have been returned with a valid birth certificate. We found that several states had different application processes. The most notable hurdles that we found that clients were having to jump over was the requiring of notary for obtaining a birth certificate. Many states require photo ID, and we had a number of clients who were requesting their birth certificate so they could get photo ID, so they were in a vicious loop at this point. Several states required parental notification for those 18 and under. That did not apply to us in any cases, but we did notice that restriction was there. Some states had put limitations on adoptees, and there's actually one state that puts restrictions on children born out of wedlock. Part of the biggest problem, though, was applications being returned to us unfulfilled because of seemingly very minor errors, such as mother's maiden name slightly misspelled or father's name missing altogether because it was unknown. Several were returned to us because the counties weren't identified. The biggest issue, however, was because this is a federal act that anybody in the country requesting or needing Medicaid services or any federal assistance of that nature was requesting their birth certificate. So large states such as California and Texas found themselves in a bottleneck. We are still waiting for applications from California to be returned to us that were sent in back in July and August. We've had a number of clients who are lacking the information in order to be able to fill out the application to get a successful return. We've been dealing with a number of clients who are foster children. They don't know their mother's maiden name or their father's name. We have one client who is a foster child who doesn't know what state she is born in. As I said, the success rate of getting birth certificates back has been less than 50% on the ones that we have tried for. The state of Oregon is having a better success rate, but not that much. Through the Medicaid services that they are offering, they also have access to the vital records database. And the last spreadsheet I got from the state of Oregon for those clients who are already on Medicaid who want to be renewed and are trying to get vital record matches, in the state of Oregon, the success rate was only 79%, which would mean that the other 21% would be going through the same process that I just outlined.
Okay, Mr. Helge, I appreciate that. And then we're going to go to Andrea here. I think you've articulated the issue with birth certificates. I guess my only question would be, on the success rate, you're talking about the 50%, is your own analysis, internal analysis, that the majority of those who you have not received positive feedback from are, in fact, legal residents, and it's not because they're not legal, it's just because that the system is not being able to retrieve that information.
Senator Metzger, we anticipate it simply because the system, somewhere in the system there are roadblocks that they cannot. We don't see that these clients are not citizens. They've paid a fee in order to get something. If they didn't think that they were entitled to it, I wonder why they would pay a fee.
Right.
So
thank
I
you.
Assume that they are entitled to it, and they just can't seem to access it for one reason or another.
Thank you very much. Ms. Meyer.
Can I excuse these two folks who need to leave?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. I am passing out testimony. I promise I will not read it to you today.
Thank you.
ACLU of Oregon opposes Real ID, and as such, we oppose enactment of Senate Bill 424. You've heard the history of this enactment of the law. It did not have hearings and a process really in the federal level, and it does federalize our driver's licenses into the first ever national identification card. Driver's licenses should be about knowing the rules of the road and being insured, and I hope Representative Thatcher in her T-bone situation had an insured driver at the other end of it. This is a huge burden on the state government. I think you've heard about this in some detail, and I will not go over it too much. But I wanted to point out that in the verification process that DMV must go through in our licenses on the issuance of every document produced, the private sector does not have any obligation to assist whatsoever when the phone calls start coming to the utility companies, the television or your Comcast or whomever you get services from that show your name and your address. So what happens when there's no verification? No license? The computer system and database changes, the machine-readable technology on licenses, accessible and common data fields for access to all states, new software and new hardware to convert all this, requiring possibly a dedicated communication network to build new fiber optic links with other states, all this is going to cost significant money. The law does not set forth, as you know, the level of security that we're to do with this whole system, but in Oregon, we must demand the highest level, and it will be expensive and difficult to administer. You will hear that all Oregonians will be affected. Many citizens will not be able to obtain identification, and you just heard that testimony. My research shows that there are 6,000 jurisdictions across the country that issue birth certificates. There are huge hurdles to get these. Personal individuals have lost their personal records to loss, to flood, fire. Anyone from Hurricane Katrina will be unable to have those documents. And the government that has stored these documents, oftentimes the documents have been destroyed, for documents have been retained for 20, 30, 40 years. People born in other states 40 or 50, 60 years ago are going to have huge hurdles. Birth certificates are not always computerized. There may be paper files that they're going to have to try to get a hold of. Millions who are foreign-born in this country will have no access to the birth certificates. Many Americans were born at home and have no access, or they don't know where they were born. You will need resources. Every Oregonian will need to pay for all these documents, let alone the cost of this new license, which we don't know what it will cost. This will dramatically affect the elderly, the poor, the disabled, the homeless. And without Real ID, we all will suffer. There's an effect on the consumer. You've heard this is a giant unfunded mandate. I mean, I guess it's not such a hidden tax because we're talking about it. But there will be higher fees, longer lines, and bureaucratic snafus. Multiple trips to DMV to get the right documents, to have the name matched, to have everything happening, and then if verification fails. The proponents, I want to talk about identity theft because I've heard often that this is a protection for us from identity theft. And let me debunk that right now. This is a gold mine for identity thieves. You'll be scanning and storing our original documents up to 10 years. I don't know about the rest of you. I'm pretty careful with my Social Security card. It's never left my home. My birth certificate and other documents, I don't even know where my birth certificate is. I would not normally even bring those out and show them to anyone, let alone turn them over to the government agency to have them scanned, kept in a database where today we don't even know that they will not be linked to 50 other states and the government. Tens of thousands of locations will have access subject to breach from outsiders or dishonest insiders and lack security. Security experts agree that this single interlinked database is a one-stop shopping place for identity thieves. Now, the common machine-readable technology that Senator Metzger mentioned on the card, so that you're walking around, and if it requires certain kinds of common machine-readable technology, anyone, good people and bad people, can get a hold of the technology that can scan it 20 feet away from you. So we've got safety issues in this, because now someone can scan your name and your address and know where you are, that you're not at your home, and know where folks live. And I think that, you know, women will feel particularly vulnerable in our society being exposed to this. In addition, there's another safety issue that's not been addressed by the Act. The Act requires that you have your address of principal residence. This does not take into account protections for judges, law enforcement enforcement personnel, and victims of harassment and stalking who do not have their addresses on these cards. Then there's the privacy invasion. The technology that I talked about in the machine-readable cards will also be a great source for the private sector. We will go in, and our licenses will be demanded at every business place that we shop and consume. They will collect that data because ChoicePoint will pay them a dime or some amount to collect that. And they will build portfolios and know more and more about all of us and create this huge consumer database. It's already happening, so this isn't speculation on my part. We're just now going to be providing it in all of our licenses. In addition, this will not protect us from terrorism. I need to note that determined terrorists will always be able to obtain fraudulent documents, and moreover, the 9/11 terrorists were in this country legally and would have qualified under Real ID. This will cost millions. We don't have the numbers here, but we've got numbers elsewhere. Maine says it will cost them $185 million. California is projecting $500 to $750 million for 5 years. Virginia, $169 million startup and $63 million annually. The numbers that they could not present you today with all the stuff are huge, huge numbers. And states are opposing. Maine has passed a resolution that says they will not implement it. Montana is passing one, a statute that will not implement 100-1 out of their House, 100-0 out of their House going on to their Senate. I understand 18 other states are moving forward, as diverse as Georgia, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Hawaii, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Vermont, Washington, Wyoming. Republican Senator from Missouri, Jim Guest, is building a coalition of folks across the country. Republican Governor Butch Otter, who supported the bill when he was a congressman, now regrets it. He thought that Idaho had the money, had the system already in place, and that he's just finding out that it will cost $40 million to start up. The head of Idaho's Homeland Security, Bill Bishop, stated, "I don't think it's necessary for us to win the war on terror to become like those we fight." U.S. Republican Senator John Sununu, describing fundamental flaws to this, said, "Simply put, the Real ID Act replaced sound policy with bad policy. I only wish that others had spoken more forcefully when a few of us in Congress tried to fight the emotional rhetoric and prevent an unnecessary bill from becoming a law." Now, I want to briefly comment about the amendments. I've attached to your my packet, among other things, statements from the Cato Institute, resolution from ALEC, some other materials, but in addition, a letter from Hillsborough Police Chief Ron Louie, speaking specifically to the issue of lawful presence in Oregon. And he eloquently writes about the need to have public safety and that we should not require lawful presence. He wants people to be insured, and he wants people to know the rules of the road. He told me in a conversation that when he goes to community meetings, the biggest complaint he gets is uninsured drivers. Now, we may or may not know the percentage of what parts of the Oregon population get insurance, but what we will know is that we will insure that a certain sector of the population will be 100% uninsured.
Ms. Meyer, thank you. I'm going to go to Mr. Bennett now.
I just was closing. Thank you. I just urge that Oregon, if you may, Senator, just let me close. I wanted to note that the first sections of your amendments with the statute saying we will not pass it is something quite familiar to us, so I'm thrilled that you've got that. We cannot support that with the lawful presence. We urge you to join the other states and push back to have Real ID repealed. Thank you.
Okay. Just one comment, though, Ms. Meyer, on your final statement. Relating to the amendment, as you know, most states do have legal presence, so pushing back isn't necessarily on that, even though I understand you're opposed to that part.
Chair Metzger, yes, pushing back the first few sections that say we won't comply with Real ID is the pushback that we would support.
Just wanted to clarify.
Thank you.
Mr. Bennett, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Metzger, members of the committee. For the record, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations for AARP Oregon. I'll be brief and allow time for others to speak, but I just wanted to let you know that AARP, with over 37 million members nationwide and 497,000 members here in Oregon, has become increasingly concerned as this has been discussed in individual states. And actually, because of that, just last week, our national board approved new language for our policy book that is specific to Real ID. And those concerns, that policy is related to two concerns that have been mentioned here. One is the issue related to the providing proof and the fact that many people are going to find it difficult to actually find those documents, and particularly those who are elderly, low-income, minorities, and those who were born and raised in rural areas. And because of that, individuals who otherwise would be eligible for certain government services may be denied those services. And we're very concerned about that. The second issue, as you've mentioned, is the issue of ID theft. Our members have indicated through surveys and polling and so forth that this is a significant issue to them. And in fact, I've been working the last 6 months or so with a work group related to a comprehensive bill on ID theft. The fact that you're going to take all of this all of these documents and scan them in, and they will be in a database that can be accessed by others and so forth. Without sufficient funds to make sure that this information is secure, obviously we have great concerns about that as well. And to secure those documents is going to take significant funds. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. And just because of the volume, I want to hear as much from this side of the dais than this side. I will dismiss you. We're going to go to the pro side. I'm going to ask Jim Ludwig, Clark Seeley, and Scott Ashton to come forward, the three of you. Mr. Ludwig is submitting written testimony, which we appreciate very much, but ask that you not read from that part so that we can have that and your comments. And we'll go in that order and again, try to get your key points out so that everyone can have an opportunity.
Thank you, Chair Metzger, members of the committee. My name is Jim Ludwig. I'm here on behalf of Oregonians for Immigration Reform. We support the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 424, and we support the remainder of the bill. Currently, Oregon is the only state on the West Coast that openly acknowledges it gives driver's licenses to illegal aliens. Oregon is one of only three states that neither verifies the Social Security number of driver's license applicants or asks for verification or proof of citizenship. As a result, Oregon has become a mecca for ID theft, the methamphetamine trade, and illegal immigration. The Oregon driver's license is the key tool in the toolbox of meth traders. They use it as a method to drive up and down I-5 and pass out their illicit drugs. If you were to look at the website of the county prisons and look at the number of people who are arrested in there for methamphetamine and see how many have ICE holds on them, it's overwhelming. It's their major way of distributing methamphetamine. Let me quote from page 3 of the governor's task force of August 2006. Quote, Oregon does not require people to prove legal presence as part of the eligibility process. This has led Oregon to becoming a magnet for people here illegally who find it increasingly difficult to obtain a driver's license in other states. This increases the risk that DMV will issue driver's license ID cards to people who aren't who they say they are, and more fraudsters will come here to Oregon. And that's the truth. There are two main components of the Real ID Act after you take out the -2 amendments. That's proof of verifiable Social Security number and legal presence. Shortly after 9/11, Raymond Martinez, the director of the New York State Transportation Division, by administrative rule, put New York State into the online verification system. But he went a step beyond Senate Bill 424. He not only required all new applicants to have a viable Social Security number, but retroactively looked into the database of existing driver's license, sent all those driver's licenses to the Social Security Administration for verification. 500,000 licenses came back as misnumbered. 500,000. He then sent letters to the 500,000 people telling them that their driver's licenses were going to be lost if they didn't rectify their situation. 250,000 were able to do so. Martinez started the process of revoking 250,000 driver's licenses in New York. Martinez's quote is a saying, over 50 New York City taxi cab drivers had as a minimum 10 New York State driver's licenses. One had 14. The reason for it is obvious. They wanted to keep one clean driver's license, so if they got DUIs or too many wrecks or too many tickets, they could still continue to drive. Now, I don't know whether there's somebody who has 14 Oregon driver's licenses, but I am struck by how often I read in the paper about an arrest of an individual who sold methamphetamine or has a DUI or is a hit and run and has multiple Oregon driver's licenses. That's not the way it should be. The Social Security online verification system is managed jointly by American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators and the Social Security Administration. In essence, what happens, a person applying for a driver's license goes to the counter of the DMV office and submits a Social Security number. They are required to do that right now. But under this plan, that Social Security number is sent electronically for verification. And within seconds, that takes place, within just seconds. The cost of that is 3 cents. When I hear these costs thrown around, it's just mind-boggling to me. In your packet, there's an evaluation of Social Security online verification system done by AMVA, the organization that does this. You know how much it cost Idaho to implement the program? $1,470. It took them 30 man-hours to implement the SOLVE program. It cost Maine zero. They did it in-house. It cost Tennessee $8,100. And they said it took 3 months to implement the program. Cost should not be a factor. And somebody's trying to throw roadblocks in front of it.
Yeah, Mr. Legge, I'm going to move on to the next gentleman, but I just want to summarize some of your comments, and I do appreciate the written testimony. I think the cost drivers that we're hearing was not on the Social Security verification, which you have indicated.
I want to make sure that's clear.
Yeah, it's with all the federal database requirements of the Real ID Act, but you're correct. That portion of it is much less expensive.
Okay, can I just sum up then?
Yeah.
Congressman Steve King of Iowa estimates that on average, 13 people are killed every day by a drunk driving illegal alien. That's almost 4,800 people per year by a drunk driving illegal alien in the United States. The last thing this state needs to do is to lure more drunk drivers, more illegal aliens, or more meth dealers into our state. I urge you to pass Senate Bill 424. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ludwig. Mr. Seeley.
Yes, Chair Metzger, my name is Clark Seeley, and I'm here just as a private citizen, and I wanted to express my support of the state of Oregon being in compliance with federal law, and also to ensure that those that have a driver's license issued in the state of Oregon have proof of U.S. citizenship. As you've already heard, there are many states that already do that, so evidently it's not so hard. In the course of my own occupation, which I've taken a day off to come down here, I'm required by federal law to check the driver's license of people that apply for a home loan. And it's in compliance with the Patriot Act. And obviously the problem that we face today is because people from other countries want to come into the country legally and maybe overstay their visas and do great harm to our country, or come into the country and just take advantage of things. And as a citizen of the United States, I'm opposed to these sort of things, and I think the state should set some standards and have some rules and things to go by, as this meeting itself has rules of order. And in conclusion, I just want to share a letter that I wrote to the Bureau of Citizenship and Immigration on behalf of my daughter-in-law. It's a petition to remove conditions on residents for Ritsuko Wada. Dear Officer, I'm honored to write these comments of support for Ritsuko Wada. My name is Clark Thomas Seeley. I live at 1631 Thompson Road in Woodburn, Oregon, 97071. I was born in Twin Falls, Idaho on May 7th, 1949. They had me say all that stuff. I am Ian Todd Seeley's father and thus Ritsuko's father-in-law. I first met Ritsuko when she and Ian started dating back in 1991. I have observed firsthand their relationship during the last 13 years, including their 3.5-year marriage. I can assure you that this relationship and subsequent marriage were legal and legitimate and not arranged to circumvent U.S. immigration policy, because obviously people try to get around U.S. immigration policy. I wholly support my daughter-in-law's U.S. residency. I do so because I am confident that their relationship has much to offer each of them on various levels of an interpersonal relationship. I was supportive enough to freely participate in their wedding ceremony back in 2001. That support continues. I see them growing together and helping each other in life. I see them often enough at family functions on holidays or in mundane daily activities. Finally, it should be noted that Ritsuko is goal-oriented, law-abiding, gainfully employed, highly educated, and is a valuable contributing member to society. Her presence here is extremely valuable, and the addition to our family is irreplaceable. And I was required, she was required to get two people to make these kind of statements for her to be able to stay in the country. And while it may seem a little bit asking a lot, I believe that our U.S. immigration policy rules are for a reason, and I think they're good, and I would encourage you to help in ensuring that people that have driver's licenses in the state of Oregon are U.S. citizens.
Thank you, Mr. Seeley. Mr. Ashkin.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Scott Ashkin with the Oregon Agricultural Alliance. We're a general statewide nonprofit organization.
If you could speak up a little bit, you're kind of whispering.
Pardon me. Representing relatively large agricultural growers throughout the state of Oregon. We're here simply to support the committee print of Senate Bill 424. We have a lot of employees that could be affected by implementation of the Real ID Act, but we don't think that there's any way, nor would we want to support taking Oregon out of the program. This is federal law. It did pass in 2005, and the state should comply with it. We know it's going to be painful for the state to comply. We know that it's going to be costly for the state to comply, but it's the right thing to do. We may lose, frankly, up to half of our employees upon full compliance with the Real ID Act. But it's a matter of national security, so we are happy to support the committee print of the program. I did hand out a statistics handout for you there, which gives you some statistics of undocumented immigration in the state of Oregon and a little nationwide. But I think that if you take the time and read through those stats, that it might be kind of an eye-opener for you. We estimate probably in the state of Oregon numerous studies have shown probably 150,000 to 200,000 undocumented immigrants in the state of Oregon, many of them employed in agriculture. So we want to do the right thing. We want to comply with the Federal Real ID Act. We know it's going to take years to get into complete compliance, but I believe that eventually the entire country will do it. Thank you very much.
Mr. Ashkin, thank you very much. I just want to ask a question because I'm not familiar with the Oregon Agricultural Alliance. Like, who are members of the alliance? I mean, trying to get a feel for...
Yes, the Oregon Agricultural Alliance has several members which are large commercial nurseries. We have large commercial hop growers in the Willamette Valley. We have cattle operations in eastern Oregon. Actually have a couple of cattle operations over on the coast. We have employers that employ probably on the average 45 to 65 or 75 full-time employees year-round. a number of them. And we have one employer, Townsend Farms, that operates in three or four counties in the state of Oregon and has, in the summertime, 2,500 employees. So a lot of these people can be affected by the Real ID Act.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask you to step back, and thank you so much for your testimony. I'm going to go on the con side again now. Jeff Stone. Kathy Powers and Kevin Finney, if I said that right. What I'm looking to is perspectives from ag on different sides, and I'm trying to do that in the half hour that we have. Mr. Stone, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeff Stone, I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. You've heard a lot today, and I won't burden you with my prepared testimony. We do have a couple considerations and would ask the chair and the committee to postpone this bill for a couple reasons. First, as you've already heard and Senator George already illustrated, that Department of Homeland Security has not promulgated the necessary rules to implement Real ID. Consequently, we think state legislatures lack specific guidance needed to properly implement Real ID, and without the benefit of regulation, it may result in unnecessary disruption and expense and require a later fix by this legislature. As we already heard, Congress isn't appropriating any dollars, which is problematic. Third, the United States Senate is currently considering legislation, S-4117, that will repeal Title II of the Real ID Act and reinstitute a certain section, which I'll give you in my written testimony. And if enacted, the bill would provide states with additional regulatory flexibility to authorize funding to allow the production and issuance of tamper and counterfeit-resistant driver's licenses, and to protect the privacy and civil liberties while advancing our national security interests. Fourth, and Mr. Ashcombe did touch upon this briefly, Congress is still considering comprehensive immigration reform legislation. And until Congress resolves the immigration issue, we believe it's both premature and unnecessary for this legislature to enact a law that will prevent many immigrants, both documented and undocumented, as well as some U.S. citizens from obtaining driver's licenses or ID. Our systems of driver's licenses is intended to ensure only those people who are properly qualified to ensure our driving in our state's roads and highways. The system, in our view, works. And until Real ID Act regulations are funded, we urge the chair and the committee to delay passage of this conforming legislation. The OAN appreciates the situation that the state and other states have and are facing. We would urge caution as you move forward until the federal government is able to give you a clear, effective, workable rule in which to operate from. And I'll conclude my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Ms. Powers.
Chair Metzger and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Katie Powers, and I am Vice President of SEIU's DMV Local 735. Our local represents almost 800 workers and almost 70 offices around the state. And I'm going to read a portion of my testimony because I'm nervous, so you're going to have to bear with me. Sorry. As a transportation service representative at the Tanasbourne DMV, I serve the citizens of Oregon in part by issuing and renewing driver's licenses, ID cards, and permits. To many Oregonians, I am the face of government. I am the face of the state government. And as a frontline worker and a leader in our union, I have major concerns about the implementation of the Real ID Act. I agree with the proposed amendment that implementation should be delayed until there are funds available from federal government and clear rules for the states to follow. We're extremely concerned about the proposed funding level. There is no funding available from the federal budget for any implementation work. The governor's budget requests just under $6 million for DMV to implement Real ID and would allot for 29 full-time employees to bring Oregon into compliance. In spite of the enormous amount of IT work this needed to maintain the requirements of Real ID, ODOT is asking for only 4.7. That's not nearly enough, and just under $2 million. The state of Washington, on the other hand, estimates the cost of approximately $20 million in the first year and $251 million over 6 years and 500 employees in the first full year of operation to handle the increased workload. We're also extremely concerned that the regulations have not yet been written. Our members can only guess at what the final rules will be, yet will be expected to implement in 1 year and 3 months. DMV issues more than 150,000 new driver's licenses yearly and renews nearly 550,000 more. Once this act takes effect, the next time you renew your driver's license, you will be required to prove you are a citizen. It won't matter if you're born in Oregon and have had a license since you were 16. It won't matter if you've moved here from another state and have trouble obtaining your birth certificate because it's been lost or misplaced. When I was applying for college years ago, I discovered my birth certificate was lost. I moved here from California. It took me 3.5 months to obtain my birth certificate. If I had to wait for my birth certificate to arrive for my driver's license, that's a very long time to be without valid driving privileges.
Ms. Bowers, and I see the rest. I'm just looking at the testimony. We've had the comments about the line and the database. So if that's okay, I'd like to take the rest of it on written testimony so we can get then to Mr. Feeney, if that's all right with you.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Finney.
And we also, by the way, have written testimony from Mr. Finney.
Yes. Public Policy Director for Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. We're a statewide association of 17 Christian denominations, many congregations, interfaith organizations, and social ministries. I'm here today to urge you to oppose this legislation. We share many of the concerns that have been expressed today about civil liberty concerns, the costs and burdens imposed on the state and its citizens, and the increased risk of identity theft. We think the legislation is premature and unnecessary. The immediate action of the legislature at this time regarding the Real ID Act, we believe, should be to pass a resolution urging Congress to repeal or fix this act. This is appropriate because our system of federalism empowers states to resist dangerous, unfair, or unjust federal requirements. And this ability of states to talk back to the federal government is an important resource in the defense of liberty. To the extent that this act is amended in such a way as to no longer bring the Oregon Vehicle Code into conformity with the Real ID Act, but to require proof of legal residence, we would also oppose that requirement. We think that it unnecessarily divides our state's residents and has the potential to turn our state DMV into an agent of oppression for our neighbors who have come thousands of miles simply to try and make a living for themselves and their families. I would hope that instead of taking that path, we would follow the wise counsel in Leviticus, that the strangers who sojourn with you shall be to you as the natives among you, and you shall love them as yourself, for you were once strangers in the land of Egypt. Under either approach, this legislation would require increased funding for the DMV, and we think those funds could be much better used reducing poverty, expanding health care access, or for a myriad of other tasks that we have before us here in Oregon. I thank you for considering our perspective on this legislation.
Thank you much, Mr. Finney. I'm going to entertain one question by Senator Starr, and then I'm going to go to two more panelists.
This is a question for you, Jeff. You commented on the kind of the big picture on Real ID. The question is on the amendment that basically we don't implement Real ID, but we move forward with legal presence. Does the Nursery Association, Nursemen's Association, have a policy on legal presence as it relates to granting of driver's licenses in Oregon?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, we see it a little bit differently. We have an overall concern of having uninsured, unlicensed drivers on the road, regardless of their country of origin. And there are significant issues with the legal presence part that we're still wrestling with as an association. But our overall goal is to make sure there are insured, licensed drivers on the road.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, folks. Okay, Ramon Ramirez, and next on the other page is Ruth Bendel. Two of you would come up. She is still here.
She's pulling on time.
I understand, but I'm trying to balance this.
I want to hug it.
We've actually met several times.
Well, that's good. That's good. So, Mr. Ramirez, you're next, and then Ms. Bendel.
I'm also part of her letter.
Yeah, she signed up together with me.
Okay, I know. I understand.
Thank you.
But I can't necessarily have everybody in that same order. So,
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Ramon Ramirez. I'm a president of the Oregon Farmworker Union. And on behalf of our 5,200 members, we wish to strongly oppose Senate Bill 424 and also the amendments requiring legal presence in the United States. I have written testimony, so I won't go into my testimony, but I just wanted to make several comments. First of all, the comment I wanted to make is that on the discussion, you know, we appreciate you having the bill come up to hearing because that's what happened in the Congress. This bill, when it was introduced by Congressman Sensenbrenner, was not given ample time for discussion and debate necessary, and we're having to suffer the consequences now, and not only in Oregon, but in each of the states that were, you know, where there, I think there's mentioned that there's 18 states now that are currently discussing or debating resolutions or the Real ID implementation. I want to raise two questions. One is on the cost, right? I think this is going to have if we pass a bill requiring legal presence, it's just going to be an amazing increase in costs, because what's going to happen, like it's happened in other states, is that immigrants who have come here to work, like in other states, we didn't come here to you know, to steal jobs away from American citizens. We didn't come here to bomb buildings. We were lured here by employers to do the jobs that other Americans didn't want to do, right? And in this case, in agriculture in the state of Oregon, we are the backbone of that industry. We provide a valuable service to all Oregonians, and for that, for the whole country and the whole world, for that matter, because, you know, a lot of our crops go other places, especially overseas. So we're providing a valuable service. I mean, immigrant workers, you know, and has the director of DMV testified earlier, you know, there's about 4%, she predicts, that there's that are people that are undocumented who get the services of DMV, either an ID or a driver's license. So we're talking about a fairly large population of people who are working out there who need a driver's license. These are people that are working in agriculture and nurseries. These are people that that need a license for the most part for their work. You know, many farms require you know, that workers drive tractors or machinery or transport the crop to the cannery. So, you know, this is going to affect agriculture in a big way. It also, if passed, you know, we're going to have a lot of uninsured motorists on the highway. So I think, you know, we oppose this particular bill because we feel it's premature. You know, we don't know what the rules are going to be. We're seeing a momentum gathering around the states to push back on Real ID. So, you know, it could be that if we pass anything now, we're going to have to come back. We don't know what the cost is. You know, we have a serious problem with the cost. Right now, I mean, in the testimony by Director Young, estimates between, you know, anywhere between 5 and 10 million. And then I look at the statistics that that the state of Washington, which is our neighbor to the north, that also has is in the process of passing a resolution pushing back on Real ID. They're sending a strong message. If that piece of legislation passes, sending a strong message to Congress to fix Real ID before it's implemented. Their cost is $251 million for the next 6 years. So I kind of did a little research about how did they reach that estimate, and I think while it's premature on their part, I think it's pretty accurate. Maine, for example, has a their fiscal on this was in the estimate of about $185 million, and many of us know that Maine is a way smaller state than Oregon. So I just really think that it's going to have a tremendous impact economically on our state.
Mr. Harris, I'm going to stop you there for a moment because I'm trying to be balanced on this.
Yes.
I do appreciate all the written testimony, and that is one of the issues that we're going to wrestle with, is the dollar amount on that and what that all emanates from. And I really, really appreciate that.
Right.
And
my point I wanted to make was that, you know, the contributions that immigrant labor has made to our state, and that when we talk about legal presence, what we're really talking about is, you know, the effects that it's going to have, tremendous effect on agricultural labor. And I think we got to recognize that that farm workers have played a major role in our economy, and we got to really, you know, when we make that decision, when we're looking at it, we really got to consider, you know, their stake in this.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ramirez. Now, the next is Ms. Bendall, I'm just noting for the record, because just as I told others here, you have signed up with a written testimony with Ms. Cornish and Ms. Bickle, but I just have one spokesman, so that will be you for that threesome, but noting that the three ladies who signed up in similar testimony. So we have 10 minutes left. Yes, welcome.
Thank you. I want to say that all three of us that signed up are fully in support of immediate implementation of the Real ID Act, at the very least proof of legal presence in the U.S. We, all three of us, attended the recent immigration fraud trials, Miguel Robledo Fabio and Sergio Robledo. We saw exactly what has happened in these past years because of the negligence of providing credible proof to DMV as to who people were. Buying an envelope for $25 with a pencil address on it, which went through the mail, an empty envelope, right, and producing that in order to then register to vote, to get the voter ID card, in order to then go and get a matricular consular card. All of these fake credentials, and for us to listen to one of the coyotes, to at least one of them, giving testimony that Oregon is the destination for getting false credentials. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a nation of laws, and we are after a 9/11 incident. Do we need to wait for the next bomb to drop before we decide that it isn't too costly to implement the requirements of Real ID to safeguard our citizenry? I have no reflection on people coming in legally wherever they come from. You can tell by my accent. I went through the process even though I was the daughter of a citizen, a U.S. citizen. The fact of the matter is that you can hear it on Fox News, on other news programs, the coyotes that bring these people across are being paid by Hezbollah and Al-Qaeda $3,000 a head to bring in their infiltrators. Do we want to be the state that makes it possible for them to get that access by giving them those credentials? If nothing else, at least require proof of legal status. And in response to the agricultural needs, in 1994, the voters of Oregon overwhelmingly approved the requirement to put prison inmates to work, not just by doing laundry in the jails or just shuffling papers. Put them to work instead of giving them video games to pass the time. They can be out there on the farm with corrections officials, with dogs, and with a bracelet, and get the work ethic. At the very least, the first offenders and the people that are out on parole. Put those people to good use no matter what. And then we've got no excuse for not implementing Real ID. The other thing I wanted to bring to your attention, which shocks me because I'm from Washington County, is that Washington County is doing a program called HELP, which is bringing in, providing education for Hispanics in driver's education using public facilities, the two sheriff's buildings in Washington County, in Beaverton and in Hillsborough, And these, through the Centro Cultural, these people only pay Centro Cultural $30, and they are provided with all this education. The rest of us have to do the work ourselves, so that there's a segregated element of the community that are getting this help at taxpayer expense. I would ask you that we want to know for sure that every one of those people would be required to meet the legal presence requirements of the federal Real ID, that there shouldn't be any further segregation. I believe there was a vote against segregation for education many, many years ago. Let's uphold that even when it comes to driver's education, and let's keep it in the language of this country so that people can read their signs. I ask you to implement at least legal presence requirements in the US at the first opportunity, and let's stop shuffling around about the cost. When it comes to prioritizing, this is a priority. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Bindle. I'm going to close this group because I'm trying to get what I can in the last few minutes. We have the three people that signed up together. I just would point out one thing is that for everyone here is that I share the concern that about our driver's licenses have not been, and I think that the department would say the same thing, have been too easily copied, and that's one of the things that we made a serious run at, which I think is going to have serious impacts. Last session was Senate Bill 640, with the biometrics and the centralized issuing to help take care of some of those issues. Thank you very much. We have 10 minutes left. This is what I'm going to ask. Of course, I have a lot of folks, as you can imagine, signed up. You have heard what we're trying to get the committee is get some of the key arguments out here on the table for further discussion. And if you have signed up, and you have a point that has not been made, not the same, any of the same points have made that we need to have on the table, raise your hand, and I will get a couple of you up here to make those points, but not, I will stop you from reiterating others. So you may come forward, sir, you may come forward. And try to be as brief as possible. We're trying to get the arguments on the table, and we'll take more time with them later.
I'm Denise Sutton. I'm from the coast. I would like to say that I moved up from California over 20 years ago, and I was riding my bike when I was about 16, and I was struck down by somebody who entered into our country to work here and had a driver's license but was uninsured. Needless to say, it costed my family thousands of dollars. Instead of asking me if I was okay, she grabbed me by the arm and she pulled me off the ground after I was thrown about 20 feet and dragged me off the middle of the road after she plowed into me. And we've never saw her again. One of the things that I have issue with is not... You know, with the civil ACLU getting in and saying this is a civil rights issue, what about the safety here for the American people? What about our civil rights? We're a nation of immigrants. We all come from somewhere. I'm Hispanic myself, and I believe that we need to have some sort of comprehensive immigration reform, and that's all I wanted to say. I wanted to share my story with you and hope that you will do something to make our state safer.
Thank you for your brevity. Sir?
Good afternoon, Chairperson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Eduardo Angulo.
And please don't read this thing because I have to stop you because I want this gentleman to comment. We're going to adjourn.
You got it. I am the chairman of the Salem Kaiser Coalition for Equality. We are 10 community organizations serving the Latino and Black community here in the Salem Kaiser area. And all our 11 community organizations strongly oppose Senate Bill 424. We all believe that this proposal is an affront to the 350,000 hardworking Latinos in Oregon. Chairperson and members of the committee, you all must remember that last November, all throughout this nation, voters spoke clearly by saying we want self-serving politicians to stop vilifying and criminalizing the Latino immigrant community. Here in Oregon, voters also spoke clearly. We want self-serving politicians to stop vilifying and criminalizing our hard-working Latino immigrant community. Oregonians are smart people and clearly recognize that the kind of mean-spirited proposals like Senate Bill 424 do not do anything good for Oregon's economy and public safety. It does the opposite. Our families and children driving the same roads and highways that unlicensed and uninsured workers will drive if this bill passes. Our Oregon business will suffer from workers and their families' lack of transportation and ability to buy goods. 12 other states with a smart leadership have introduced legislation to stop the implementation of the Real ID Act, as it is counterproductive to the well-being of their citizens and very expensive to implement. We, the 11 community organizations of the Salem Kaiser Coalition for Equality, and all its thousands of members, ask you to oppose Senate Bill 424.
Thank you, sir, very much.
Thank you.
I do appreciate that. Sir, you get the last word.
Oh, I'm not nervous enough. Okay. For the record, my name is Rick Hickey. I'm a citizen of Salem. I fully support Bill 424 and especially the amendment where we don't have to do the expensive federal biometric stuff. As we heard earlier, this only cost the state maybe a few $1,000s. One thing that keeps coming up that has not been fully addressed is the insurance issue. I'm a licensed insurance agent.
Who do you represent?
I represent a supplemental insurance company,
okay.
But I go to insurance meetings with people that sell car insurance. And anybody in this room today can go to a car insurance company, buy that insurance, so they can get a license, and then let it expire next month, the insurance. There is no system in Oregon to make sure that you maintain your car insurance. In fact, I have a memo from Oregon DMV printed November 22nd, 2004, and their memo says, it's just two sentences, other states' experiences indicate that requiring legal presence does not result in an increase in uninsured motorists. The Insurance Information Institute, the Insurance Research Council do not identify legal presence as a major contributing factor for a state's uninsured rate, but instead rank the cost of premiums, enforcement, and economic factors higher. And
by the way, I'd love a copy of that because I've been looking for some data on insurance. So when we're finished here.
You bet, I will get you a copy of that. And again, I can't believe what I'm hearing today. You know, years after 9/11, where we know that terrorists, drug dealers, rapists, meth dealers want photo ID. When they get pulled over by the police, they want to make sure that the police do not have justifiable cause to continue with an investigation. Muhammad Atta got an 8-year driver's license with a temporary visa. He did that attack 2 years after he got that license with a temporary visa. I wish the police officer that gave him a speeding ticket also noticed that he couldn't have a license. If he didn't have a license, maybe further investigation would have occurred. This does not affect the Latino community. It does not affect the immigrant community. It only affects illegal aliens, no matter where they're from. So I fully support the bill. I know a bunch of people that do, but they're working right now. So
thank you, sir, and thank you for taking the time. One of the difficulties about a bill as complex as this is that our committee time, which we could go on today and for a number of days and would be very valuable, doesn't permit us to do that. And we would love to hear from everybody in the audience. And for those of you in here, I understand we have an overflow crowd in hearing room C also. But the objective today was to get some of those key issues and thoughts on the table so that we can start putting them in our dustpan a little bit and start having a greater discussion about those issues. There's a couple of things that I would like, and particularly those in the agricultural community, to develop for us in short order for the next conversation. And one is, and I'll hold this up just because we have cameras, people at home, is the legal presence requirement that so many states do. I know in the nursery, Mr. Stone, South Carolina is a leading nursery state, and they do have a legal presence requirement, so does California. One thing I would like to see if we can find some information of how this, and I'm not talking about real ID now, I'm talking about the legal presence. We've had two different discussions here, but basically how that has, how do they manage that? I mean, I just like, or if they don't manage it, but I'd like to know that and get some better detail on that. Certainly, the concerns that have been expressed by the witnesses today on the real ID in terms of the federal issues, the privacy issues, also the concern about the legal presence and where Oregon is in the matrix of all other states. These are all things that this committee needs to wrestle with. And keep in mind that we will be doing something. If we did nothing, we have done something, because the federal, at this moment, the federal government is going to require us, and if we don't do it, then that is also an affirmative action that could be detrimental when maybe some of us get calls from 85-year-old World War II veterans who want to know how they can't get on an airplane. On the other hand, if we do something that pushes back on this and does and do other things within our own state, we're going to have other issues, but we're going to try to get those done. I'd like to have just comments, any comments before we adjourn by the committee of just what we've heard today, or kind of direction that for our next meeting on this topic that has spurred some thought as a result of what we've heard. Senator Stark.
Well, Mr. Chair, if folks that are here came to testify brought written testimony, please get that in, and we can add that to our file. And you know, it's a process where we have limited time, and unfortunately, not everybody can testify. But if you have written testimony, please get that in so we can add it to our files and review it as we deliberate on this important subject.
Thank you. That's very valuable, because we're going to be doing a lot of reading now as a result. Any other comments by the committee? I think we all know this is a pretty complex issue, and we're going to do our best to move through this. If you have additional material and you Senator Stark said, please submit it. If you have some later, Janet Atkins, our committee administrator, will take that and distribute that to us, and then we'll come back with a more focused discussion on the issues we heard today. Thank you all so much for your patience and your being attentive. Committee's adjourned. Thank you.